President Obama sent a formal request today to Congress for a 3-year authorization of military force against the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. Right now, it's our weekly look at Congress with USA Today Washington correspondent Paul Singer.
Also on the agenda today, we're getting closer to the likelihood that President Obama will issue his first veto of this Congress on the Keystone XL pipeline bill. Paul Singer joins us every week at this time. Paul, good to have you back.
How you doing, Rob? Good to be here.
I'm doing pretty good. Well, let's start with this authorization for the use of military force. We're already using military force, so what is this authorization asking for exactly?
Right. Well, in fact, the Obama administration argues that they don't actually really need the authorization, that they have all the authority they need, but that they want authorization for from Congress, largely because they want Congress on the record standing beside the administration in this fight against ISIS. And it's really symbolic in some way that Congress essentially says, we agree these are bad people and we should be engaged in military conflict to stop them. Now, the trick, of course, is that when Congress, even doing something that is essentially symbolic like that, Congress may start to add some restrictions that will make the Obama administration very uncomfortable. And this is the challenge of any time trying to get Congress to essentially approve war footing, is that they then say, well, but maybe only a little bit bombing or a little more bombing. And that becomes hard to navigate.
Yeah, the president, as you say, has said he has the legal authority to bomb ISIS already. Is there language in here that would let him do more than that?
There's a couple of issues in the way the language is defined. One is that I think that there are some people who would argue that it actually would allow him to expand the region in which he is pursuing ISIS into other countries. There is also some question about whether it would allow him to engage ground troops in a way that currently the administration says they don't want to or plan to, but they might have to at some point. And I think you'll see some Democrats saying that we and also some Republicans saying that we shouldn't be committing to an eternal war on the ground again in Iraq and perhaps even Syria. You'll see a lot of Republicans, oddly enough, saying, no, the president should have as much leeway as he needs to, as commander-in-chief, execute a military campaign.
Are we seeing a lot of parsing of language from people in Congress right now of what the president has drafted?
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be hearings. There's going to be, a real sit-down discussion about exactly what language to use. You know, is a 3-year timeline the right timeline? How often should the administration report back? I mean, there'll be all kinds of, everybody sees in this language whatever they want to see. Because, again, keep in mind, because it is symbolic, not really binding, it's not entirely clear how much any of it really means, and therefore you can read into it almost anything.
Is there a concern that, okay, we're operating on this 2001 request or approval authorization for use of force? Likely the people who voted on that weren't thinking this is going to apply to this situation 14 years down the road, so we got to be careful this time not to authorize something unexpected 10, 15 years from now.
Yeah, well, I think that also to some degree speaks to one of the reasons why people want to have this discussion now is because the old authorizations for military force are getting old and in some ways are very broad and much broader than this. My understanding is that this would replace the 2002 authorization for the war in Iraq, but it wouldn't replace the 2001 authorization that basically allows the administration to go anywhere and kill anybody who is a threat to the United States, which is still in effect and still scares some people because it's pretty broad. So, I think you get into these, how many angels on the head of a pin kind of arguments, but you're talking about whether or not this nation is committed to a military campaign against ISIS. And despite the fact that we already are fighting that campaign, this is Congress's opportunity to say, well, yes, we believe in it, but we have some caveats.
It seems like this could end up anywhere from Congress passing something that says, something watered down like ISIS is bad, to a really detailed here's how and when and how long and how much reapproval we need. It could be anywhere in between those two points, it seems like.
That's possible, and I think even, another concern is that it could get to the point where Congress can't pass it at all. I think the worst possible outcome for the Obama administration, really, at this point, would be a resolution where Congress can't back it. It would make It would just be another embarrassment for the administration. You'll remember that they tried to get the authorization to use military force against the Syrian government, and that basically was about to get defeated in the Senate, and so they pulled it back and instead had some negotiations that may or may not have succeeded in the same kind of goals. But anyway, it's a bit of a wild card. You know, I think Congress wants to endorse this. They want to endorse this action. But how they get the language there, I just don't know.
Speaking of things that Congress can't all get on the same page on, we've talked a little bit about the Homeland Security Department. Republicans trying to pass a thing that, in the funding for Homeland Security, takes away some of the executive actions the president has done on immigration. What's the update? What's the latest on that?
I can't say it on the radio, but Mr. Boehner in the House today, the Speaker of the House, had some fairly coarse words for the Democrats in the Senate. Essentially, the Senate gave up on this bill a couple of nights ago and said, we can't pass it. So now the House has to do something and come up with something that we can pass. And Boehner said, essentially, this is the fault of the Democrats who are just saying no on everything, and they should, I paraphrase, get off their butts and do something other than vote no. So at the moment, we don't know. I mean, we've got a week. We've got to fund the Homeland Security Department. Who knows? My best guess, honestly, at this point, is they'll come up with some sort of a short-term, you know, month or so funding bill just to keep it open for a while they scratch their heads a little more about what to do. You know, Congress is out of session next week, so there's not a lot of time.
So this is one of those situations where nobody probably wants Homeland Security funding to lapse, and yet they keep inching closer to exactly that.
Right. Your Congress in mind, my friend.
Well, let's talk Keystone XL pipeline. Big ticket item today. By the end of the day, President Obama is going to have to start thinking about how and when to veto something that's passed both chambers of Congress.
Right. This will be his first opportunity to veto a bill from this Republican-controlled Congress in the House and the Senate. You know, and it's a bipartisan bill. I mean, it has support of Republicans and Democrats, not the majority of the Democrats, but the minority of Democrats. And you know, Obama's argument all along has been, well, this pipeline is in the administrative review process. There is a process for determining whether or not it should be constructed to get a permit, and that process should continue and should not be circumvented. The Republicans argue that this is a big jobs boon for the United States, 40,000 jobs in construction of this pipeline and you know, really helping the energy sector. Democrats say these are all short-term jobs. Congressman Bobby Rush on the floor of the House today said you would get more permanent jobs out of a franchise burger joint on the corner than you would out of this pipeline. But I think the Democrats argue now, why are we bothering to pass this thing since we know that Obama's going to veto it? And the Republicans are saying, well, Obama said he wanted a bipartisan bill. We're giving him one. How come he's vetoing it?
Even with some bipartisan support, not enough to override a veto, right?
No. In the Senate, it only passed with 62 votes. They'd need 67 to override a veto, so we don't see where they get those votes.
Is there a plan B? I've heard some talk that, we won't pass a Keystone pipeline bill. We'll take an energy bill that we need to pass, put Keystone in it, and then see if the president's willing to veto that whole package.
Sure, but that's down the road a piece. You've seen in this Congress, and this is not to disparage the Republicans, but you have seen in this Congress, they are not shy about, you know, making the point once, then making it again, then making it a third time. So it would not surprise me at all that if the president vetoes this bill, it'll show up in some other bill. You know, any kind of energy package is going to take much, much longer, and frankly, it's probably going to run into some of the same problems once it gets to the president's desk anyhow. Given the differences that this administration has with the Republican leadership on stuff like climate change and energy development.
Briefly, a sign of things to come for the next few years, this back and forth, Senate Democrats blocking this, vetoes blocking that?
Yes, that is, as briefly as I can state it, yes. That is where Congress, you know, we now have a fully Republican Congress. It used to be the Democratic Senate would block House bills. Now it's going to be the president.
Well, I want to get into a story that you have been reporting on from one of our neighboring states, Congressman Republican Aaron Schock from Illinois. Give us the background on that story.
Washington Post reporter walks into Aaron Schock's office in House office building here in Washington, and it is decorated bright red. It looks like a room from Downton Abbey. And in fact, the receptionist says, yeah, it's Downton Abbey inspired. We started to look into some of Congressman Schock's expenditures and discovered that he had previously spent about $100,000 worth of taxpayer money on renovating his district offices. That's a lot. Most congressional renovations are $10,000 paint and plaster jobs. This one had hardwood floors and granite countertops. We have not yet seen pictures of the renovation, but we saw the expenses. Then we discovered that the congressman has spent more than only about a dozen other members of Congress on travel. He's been chartering aircraft to travel around a district in Peoria, Illinois. Doesn't seem like it would be that expensive to do that much travel, but he's one of the top 15 travel spenders in the House of Representatives. So now the congressman has a lot of explaining to do about exactly what he's been spending all this money on. This is all taxpayer dollars. He has to answer to whether or not it's a good expenditure of those dollars. And, of course, we're also continuing to look for, are there expenditures that simply should not have been made?
Has he responded to these stories?
Not really. I mean, what he said was, he travels a lot in the district because he makes a commitment to be on the ground everywhere, to go meet his constituents wherever they are, which is, fair, except, both the senators in Illinois travel less than he does, and they represent the entire state, so it's hard to make that case. He has not responded to any of the specific allegations about any of the construction costs. He has said that he'll make sure that he pays for the design of his Downton Abbey office, which he's also said was not actually Downton Abbey office. He says he never watches the show. So who knows? I mean, it's just a way to look at the bizarre things that happen when you remember that each member of Congress runs their office as their own small business with their own budget.
We'll leave it there for now, but I assume you'll be watching that story in the future. Paul, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, Rob. Have a great day.
You too. That's USA Today Washington correspondent Paul Singer. He joins us every week at this time to give us the latest news from Congress.